Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Local Voter Education Program Sundays from 8 to 9 p.m. Our upcoming programs are March 6th. A recall for the Fort Worth Mayor Mattie Parker to step down. March 13th, Kim Neal, the department head over the Office of the Police Oversight Monitor. And with that, we are happy to have tonight's guest Taylor Mondick running for Texas State House District 95. And now here is your host, James H. McBride.
How you doing, folks? Welcome to another edition of the Local Voter Education Podcast, done here for you every Sunday evening on blogtalkradio.com. In addition, you can find this podcast and other important information at fwdistrict5.com. My name is James H. McBride. I am your host for this evening. Riding shotgun with me, as always, is Bob Willoughby. How you doing this evening, Bob?
I'm doing good. I'm about to thaw out just about after those few cold days here, so maybe by next week I'll be fully thawed out. So anyway, hanging in here and doing good, James.
All right, City Council, this meeting is just going to be citizen presentations, I believe. Is that correct, Bob?
That's it. That's the only thing there. I have a video that will be playing, and also you can see all these presentations on Channel 190 Charter, Spectrum Charter, one channel, Channel 190, at 6 p.m., and I made a nice little video for the council and just got it approved by the lawyer, so it'll be on to see my own personal problem with the city there by video. So, and yeah, and, you know, there's not much. These presentations are really, they're really a joke at the end of the day. You know, we should be back on the regular city council meetings. We were on the regular council meetings. Why they took us off the council meetings, that's what everybody should be asking Mayor Mattie Parker, that one question. It's a very legitimate question. Why did you take away our right to speak? Now, that's what we should have people really just hammer until we get an answer to that. Anyway, I can go on all day about this one, so... but, yeah, there's not much there and on that one. Go ahead, James.
Okay. Well, tonight our guest is going to be Taylor Mondick, who is going to be running for Texas House in the 95th District. Do we have Taylor on the phone?
I believe we do here, James. Let's see. 2754.
Hey,
is that you, Taylor?
Yes, sir.
How you
That's
doing?
Me.
Glad to have
I'm
you
good.
On here.
How are you
Go
guys
ahead.
Doing?
All right. Go ahead,
Thank
James.
Thank you so much.
Doing well,
having
Taylor.
Me.
Yeah, glad you could be here tonight. Taylor, if you want to, why don't you start off just telling us who you are?
All right. Well, I'm Taylor Mondick, and like they said, I am running to represent District 95 in the Texas House. I've lived in Fort Worth for a little over a decade, and I'm a small business owner. I own a gym, actually, where we teach kids how to do flips and keep them in shape and engaged and athletic. And I've been doing that for a while now. I've been working with kids for about 19 years. And, you know, just the way things are going, decided to throw my hat in the ring here.
Now, Taylor, as far as I could tell in doing my research for this podcast, I believe this is your first campaign, correct?
Yes, sir, it is.
Okay, how is it going for you for your first campaign? How is fundraising going for you? How is it getting your message out there right now?
Well, I mean, it's going good. You know, as this is my first campaign, I'm learning a lot. I've spent the first couple of months, you know, kind of just getting familiar with some of our conservative clubs here in Fort Worth and, you know, just getting to know those people, some of the movers and the shakers. You know, fundraising has been slow. It picked up a little bit after December, but you know, this, you know, people say they run grassroots campaigns. Well, this is grassroots minus grassroots. I mean, you know, it's basically, it's just me. And you know, I've met a lot of really good people along the way that have, you know, given me some great advice. I've been able to help out with a few campaigns here and there and just kind of get my feet wet. But you know, ultimately I'm not doing this for any other reason than to make a difference in the community. So, you know, I don't need anything big and, you know, elaborate. So you know, that's kind of been my game so far. As far as getting my message out, you know, starting in March, I will be block walking. Every single door I can knock on from here to November, I'll be doing that. You know, I'm getting more familiar with some of the voters in my community. So that's the plan moving forward.
Okay, Taylor, now, you've got it lucky. You don't have to sweat anything out come Tuesday evening because you're running unopposed. However, this district is a heavily Democratic district with, I believe, Nicole Collier is the representative in that district at this point in time right now. How do you plan to get in there to make the Republican message heard over the Democratic message besides going door to door?
Right. Well, I think going door to door and getting face to face with the members of our community is going to be, you know, the best way to get this message out there. You know, I don't have a ton of funds. So as far as sending mailers to every single household, I mean, this is not going to be feasible to me. And plus, it's not as personal. I realize that to most, this is a battle that, you know, seemingly can't be won. However, if you look at the state of the country today, I think we are all starting to see that the issues that we are constantly being divided over are so little, so minute compared to the things that we actually need to take care of. And, you know, I hope that getting in front of some of our, you know, Democrat voters, that we can level, you know, on a personal level and, you know, freely talk about the things that are affecting every single one of us. I mean, this is no longer a Republican-Democrat issue. I mean, it's not. We're all feeling the effects of, you know, the policy that's being implemented right now across the country. And so I think that that is really going to resonate, you know, with voters. I mean, that's my hope at least.
Now this district, whenever I looked at it, I didn't realize it's kind of drawn in a crazy way. It's got a lot of property up in the Alliance area on the east side of 35. It's got a little swath that runs down through Haltom City, and then south of 30, it goes east for a good little ways there. What do you think is the most important part of that district for you to hit?
Well, at first, I thought, okay, you know, Republicans are few and far between in this district. I need to hit up every single Republican I can find. I need to look them in the eye, you know, introduce myself and just fire up the base. And, you know, I think there's something to that. There really is. You know, maybe it's my competitive nature, but I think that the most important area are these, maybe these deeper blue areas. Because at the end of the day, whether they end up voting for me or not, if I'm able to get with them on a personal level and discuss real issues without any kind of partisan, you know, silver-tongued language, then I've made a difference. And, you know, I'm sure someone a little bit more, you know, I guess accustomed to, you know, running campaigns and stuff, they would say that's crazy. I mean, that's nonsense. You're wasting your time. I mean, I've heard that. I've read that. People have told me that. But, you know, here's the deal. I'm trying to make true, impactful, meaningful, lasting change. And I think that our more, you know, heavily Democrat districts, we're talking maybe Forest Hill down that area, the east side, like you're saying, east of 35, you know, Morningside, areas like that, you know, those are the communities that I'm drawn to, that I want to get my message out to, you know, these voters and see if we can't not come to, you know, some sort of understanding, you know, with one another. You know, I hope it looks like the Republicans have really turned out this election, which is awesome, at least in early voting. I'm hoping we get even more on Tuesday. But, you know, with this being a blue district, I mean, every area is going to be strategic, is going to be important.
All right. Our guest tonight, Tyler Mondick, is got a website if you want to find more information. It's going to be mondick495.com. Taylor, I want to ask you here, you've got some priorities for your campaign that you want to deal with. I was wondering, do you have these in preferential order when they're lined up on your website?
Not necessarily in preferential order. I mean, there are a couple that I think are most pressing, and, you know, I'd be happy to discuss those with you if you'd like.
Absolutely. What do you think is the most pressing issue in the state of Texas right now, especially for District 95?
Personally, in my opinion, I think it's our education system. You know, we are starting to really see the effects of poor education. And by poor, I mean misaligned to the very foundational beliefs and creeds that this country was founded on. I mean, just today I was looking at an eighth grade graduation exam from 1912. And the questions on there, in order to pass eighth grade, you know, were about bordering countries, foreign governments, you know, local governments, policies and procedures and how things are passed. And, you know, of course, other areas, you know, math and reading and writing and all of those things. But we are so far removed from what public education was set out to do that, to me, that is the most pressing issue. You know, our kids are coming out of high school not knowing a lick about their local government or how things are run. Most are coming out with, you know, a bent towards, you know, communist, socialist, Marxist ideals and ideologies. And we're seeing that. And, you know, whether you like it or not, our kids they're our future leaders. And so that, to me, is a huge issue, introducing civics and the importance of our founding documents back into the classroom, you know, leaving the character training and the emotional support to the parents. You know, that is the parents' job. And I think that is one of the most important issues. Now, with that, you also have, you know, on the flip side, this hugely complex and convoluted funding system that we have here in Texas that, I mean, just make your head spin when you try to figure it all out. We have a ton of special interest groups that come in and give, you know, the Department of Education here tons of money, and, you know, they get to implement certain curriculums. Some of that curriculum, the parents don't even have to know what's being taught in these schools. So I think if we're talking about the longevity of our state and really securing our freedoms, it's going to start with education. So to me, that is the most important, and that's where I would like to, you know, start if elected.
Okay. Another issue you have that you say you want to tackle is health care. What are your plans to change health care in the state of Texas?
Yeah, absolutely. So here's the deal. This is my take on health care. If we truly want affordable and equal access, someone's working outside right now, you know, equal access to quality health care, then first and foremost, we've got to exercise our right as a free and sovereign state and reject all of this government interference. For example, these top-down, you know, federal mandates that really restrict insurance companies and, you know, sky-high premiums and things like that. You know, the government and insurance companies both, you know, they have formed this monopoly as payers where they get to kind of decide what kinds of health care are available, you know, who can open up new facilities, where they can open up these facilities. And it's making health, the price is skyrocketing. And, you know, as a business owner, I believe that a free market and competition, you know, that's what drives quality and affordability across the board. I've seen it in my own business. So I think that is definitely a place that could use some improvement. And, you know, we do what we can to restrict the government from coming in and stifling, you know, equal access to affordable health care.
Okay, now another one you have on there is you have public safety, dealing with border security and human trafficking and other issues. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So as far as the border goes, I think first and foremost, it's kind of a step-by-step process. One, we need to make sure that our guardsmen are okay. And by okay, I mean that their mental game is on point. You know, we've heard about, you know, recent suicides. I have a buddy that's in the Army National Guard here in Texas. He's lost two friends already. So, you know, sure, I can say we need to deploy, you know, the full strength of the Texas military, but if our guardsmen aren't right, then it's going to be useless. So I think that's first and foremost. We're making sure they're getting paid. We're honoring our educational benefits, which, let's face it, that's, you know, a lot of people sign up because of those benefits. So we need to make sure that that's in check. I think that we can invest in high-tech security systems, cameras, sensors, things like that. You know, it shouldn't be a surprise when people are showing up and, you know, in groups of thousands and, you know, overwhelming our border agents. You know, we should be able to see them from 100 miles away and take care of the issue right then and there. And, you know, moreover, if we really wanted to secure our border, it would have been done already. You know, I realize that there's some give and take with, you know, the federal government and what our state government can do, and I think that that's important that we recognize that. But there's a lot more that can be done. Taking care of the guardsmen, investing in high-tech security, you know, bolstering resources to border towns and making sure that their law enforcement is equipped is also another huge issue.
I want to remind you, if you got a question or comment for our guest, you can call into 515-602-9610 and press 1 to get into queue. Again, that phone number is 515-602-9610. Tyler, talking about the public safety on your website here, you've got one bullet point on here that's kind of confusing to me, and I'd like you to explain it. It talks about criminal justice reform, starting with reducing the number of statutory federal crimes. This is a state position. How do you plan to deal with federal crimes when they're two different entities?
I think what I was in, you know, maybe I can go back and I'll take a look at that again and make sure that the wording, you know, is doing justice to kind of what I believe. But right now we have a laundry list of offenses that throw people in jail for God knows how many years. And some of these offenses are petty crimes, you know, misdemeanors. So I think that that was kind of the path that the point that I was trying to make is that we have our prisons, which prisons are big business. We all know that, but they're filling up, we're paying for it. And we're ultimately setting up people for failure, especially in some of our, you know, lower income districts. So I think that we should look at this myriad of, you know, of offenses that we're throwing people in jail for and see if maybe there is a, you know, a better way to tackle that as opposed to, you know, locking people up. So I'll definitely take a look at that, though, and make sure that my point comes across a little bit more clear.
All right, another point you have is you have economic development. And you talked about wanting to fix the current licensing and permit policies for new businesses. How do you plan to do that?
So, you know, I have a lot of friends in the bar and or restaurant business, for example. And good Lord, some people are waiting, you know, almost a year just to get any kind of permits and so that they can open up. So that, for one, you know, the Department of Licensing and Regulation, good Lord, that can take forever. And it really it hinders economic growth. It stifles, you know, business opportunities, especially within my community. Now, as far as getting that accomplished, a lot of that is going to come down to who we elect. I hope that we get enough good candidates elected that are pro small business and that are willing to maybe scale back some of these permit policies that, you know, are holding up, you know, potential growth opportunities within communities. So, I mean, that's the goal. However, you know, you never know what you're going to get until you get in there. And we see it. A lot of people make a lot of promises and then they get in there and then nothing happens. I mean, how long have we been dealing with some of these issues, especially with, you know, licensing and permits? So, I mean, I know it's a priority of mine, you know, especially being a small business owner, but, you know, ultimately we've got to elect the right people in there to really scale back some of these issues.
You have as another topic that you want to try to tackle if you're able to get down to Austin is infrastructure. Now, you also talk about developing alternative energy production on there. What kind of alternative energy production are you talking about?
Okay, so here's the deal. We know wind and solar, they're only going to do so much for us. Now, I think that these are resources, especially with increase in technology, and we're making advancements every single day. These are resources that we can continue to invest in. And I'm all for that. I'm all for clean energy. I'm all for those kind of things. However, you know, and I do want to make this a point, you know, natural gas, oil, it's a big business here in Texas. And ultimately, it's what keeps the lights on. So I think I take a more moderate route on this issue. Yes, we continue to, you know, invest and make advancements in clean and renewable energy resources. But in no way, shape, or form am I saying that we need to, you know, completely rely on that. I mean, they just don't have the storage capabilities. And especially for a place like Texas, and we're constantly building new homes, and we've already had issues with the grid before. I think that, you know, even making further investments and renewing some more oil leases here in Texas would be extremely beneficial as well.
Another issue you have is, I guess, the loss of individual rights and freedoms that we've supposedly had during these last couple of years. Now, you also have on there as the Second Amendment is your advocacy for. Are you a firm believer in the full open Second Amendment?
Yes, I am, unequivocally.
Now, another one you have, which is something I'm sure a lot of people would be interested in, you have to eliminate property tax once and for all. What is your plan to eliminate property tax?
Oh, gosh, how long have we been talking about eliminating property taxes in Texas? Many decades. So, first and foremost, when it comes to property taxes, we all know the basic issues here. You don't really own anything. You're basically renting your home, your land, your property from the government, right? No one wants that. It's unconstitutional. Okay, but this is the problem that we have, and we've got to deal with it. Now, I don't necessarily love the idea of taking one tax out and implementing another. However, I think in order to buy down some of this, you know, some of these funds that we're going to have to make up for in order to fund our local government, I am, you know, for the idea of a consumption tax. You know, maybe, you know, I say a flat rate. Sometimes you get arguments about, you know, what about, you know, lower income, you know, individuals, households, things like that. So maybe there's a, you know, a scaled rate, a progressive rate that, you know, based on your income, we could look at that. But I think that a consumption tax is not a terrible idea. You know, another thing we could do is, I mean, there's about 15 agencies or departments in the state of Texas that we could probably do away with. You know, TABC, Department of Licensing Regulation, the TEC, maybe even the, you know, TEA, the Commission on Environmental Quality. I mean, I know this is a little wild to some people, but we are bleeding money left and right, and a lot of these are going to these antiquated departments that are either overstaffed or overfunded. So we could definitely, you know, save money that way too, and I think that could help. But one important point I want to make is we can't just keep talking about it. We're going to need to get in there and just stop it. And we may not have all the answers right then and there, but that is the only way that this issue is going to get resolved, in my opinion.
Now, if you do get down to Austin and you can't get a caucus together or a coalition together to eliminate property taxes, my next question is to you, because you talk about education being a big part of your platform. Do you think it's time for the individual taxpayers to be able to spend their tax money that goes to the school district at the school they choose to?
I do, but, and this is a very important point that I think people need to understand, is any time that even a penny of federal dollars is attached to public education, regardless of if you're taking that as a voucher and you're taking it to another school, anytime these institutions, these schools, whether it be charter, you know, public, private, magnet, whatever, they are required by Texas law from the Every Student Succeeds Act, the ESSA, to still teach some of this, you know, American curriculum, you know, the CRT, the SEL, things like this. So we've got to be careful when we talk about, you know, taking some of this tax money away and then applying it to some of the schools, because when I talk about reforming education, I mean getting rid of all that garbage. So, you know, that's one thing that we just have to be aware of, and how we tackle that, you know, I don't exactly know yet, but I know that there are a lot of good people out there and a lot of good candidates that are working hard to come up with solutions for this issue, and, you know, I am as well. So I do believe in school choice and expanding parents' rights, but let's not forget we've always had that right. You know, parents have the right to homeschool their kids or take their kids elsewhere. But, yes, I agree that if our tax dollars, they're going to fund public schools, we should have a say in how that money is allocated, you know, especially since these schools have all these special little districts. I mean, there's just all these little ways that schools can get money from the government, right? And parents still have hardly any say in the material that their kids are being taught. So I do agree. I just think that we have to be careful.
Bob, before we open up the phone lines, I want to bring you in. Do you have anything you want to say?
Well, just I can go over just a few things there on the property tax, the same as I did with our last guest there when he was talking about cutting property tax. What I suggested was, what I'm thinking is that wouldn't it be easier to take this is something major to try to get rid of all that property tax. I think it's something really major. Wouldn't it be better to take, if you can make small steps? I was thinking if you at least could own your home after you're 65, you should at least own your home by then. If you can't get that done, where you're property tax free from there, I don't see how you're going to get rid of all the rest of it then. And that seems like a smaller thing because a lot of people are homestead. Their bill's smaller, so you're not talking quite the large fund as you would trying to replace all the fund of that. So that's what I always thought, one step at a time kind of like. What's your because, you know, if you get 65, things can happen beyond your control. You sure can't start over at a new job, you know, and expect to get anywhere. So you're
right.
That's when you really definitely need it. And before you die, it'd be nice to own your house a little while, you know. So I'm thinking the small step approach. Does that sound feasible? I do like the consumption tax. I do like that.
Yeah.
You
have a great point, Bob. I mean, you do. My only fear is, you know, like I said earlier, how long have we been talking about this? Now, granted, this small step that you're taking, I'm not sure that we've had any small steps really. So, you know, that is something to think about. But, you know, it's like, say you get a surprise bill in the mail, and this is massive, and you had no idea that it was coming. I mean, you don't just say, okay, well, I'm just going to, you know, put it to the side, figure out how I'm going to pay for it later. No, you get to work. You know, you say, okay, I know I have to pay this by this date. What are we going to do? And I just feel like that is the approach that we're going to have to take with this issue because we have been talking about it for so long. And like I had mentioned, I think with one of the other issues we were talking about, you know, a lot of this depends on who gets elected. I mean, you know, we can no longer have 3% of Texans deciding who governs the 97%. It's, you know, if these are real issues for real people, then we need to get out there and we need to elect people that are willing to make changes. But, you know, depending on who does get elected, if the only thing that we're able to do is, you know, a small step, well, hey, at least it's a step in the right direction.
Well, just to see something, I'm saying if you can't make that small one, how can you do the whole big one, you know? But also another point I wanted to bring up, too. I ran for office the last four times. I'm going to run one more time. And, it seems to be the key to get elected, one thing, and what all the major people do that get elected is from the mail-out leaflets. That's the key thing. That's better than the signs. That's better, but it costs a lot of money to mail all those, you know, out those mail leaves. But also what they're doing, though, is the candidates are only hitting the people that voted last time, Democrats doing Democrats, Republicans doing Republicans. You still have 50% of the population that's unregistered voters that don't even know what's going on and just outside the loop. So I'm doing the cards, but I do them door-to-door. And knocking on doors, I've never really grasped that. it seems like it takes too long. Like someone answers the door and, you know, are they an unregistered voter or not and all that. But when I find out, I can put out 1,000 cards at my age and my weight a week on door-to-door, 1,000. I put out about a couple hundred a day, 200 or 300 a day with an over-shoulder bag and just stick it on that door, hit the next one, hit the next one. You're hitting unregistered voters. You're hitting registered voters. You're hitting Democrats. You're hitting everybody. And that's what I think we need to do is try to get some of that crop that's not into this to draw in more voters, more people, and by giving them information of what's going on in our city, when people get educated what's going on somewhat, they're more apt to maybe get involved, and especially like the ones I've got going on about our mayor right now that's going to go out. I've got cards coming in. I hope it does. I'll put it this way. As crazy as it is out there, if our council and mayor get the raise they're asking for and take away our First Amendment and get reelected, I give up. I don't think I can, after 10 years of this, I know when I'm beat. I mean, that's just too crazy, you know, for me. I know, but that's just too much in one way. And to be in the office, you know, do all that. So, but anyway, I was just going to suggest that it doesn't cost as much, you know. You know, you put them out door-to-door. You can reach more people quickly. That's what I use, that strategy. And that's all, I was just suggesting that to you in a grassroots campaign. And if you had several people putting them out like that, you can cover a lot of area and not that much money. But that was the,
yeah,
that was the main
no,
two
that's,
there.
That's great. Yeah, that is a great suggestion. And I've got that in the works as well. You know, I did send out some mailers and was super strategic about it because, as you know, they are very expensive. You know, I paid a ton for a very few amount, and they came back and I had a huge white spot on my face. So that was fun. whole back of the card only had half my name on there. So I was just, you know, it's like, oh my goodness. But I'm going to do everything that I can. And I love what you said about just educating the voters, because so many people just have no clue what's going on. I mean, no clue. Yeah. And
you got
you
a
know,
lot of registered voters that aren't voting. And if
you
give them any knowledge, you stimulate you give them something they didn't know, you stimulate their brain, then they feel indebted to you. And that's the key.
Yeah.
And that's why the city cuts down all of our media. That's why they took away our right to speak at city council. And that's why our Channel 4, 5, 8, and 11 won't talk anything about the First Amendment being taken away. Now, they'll talk about that raise because that's open stuff there. That goes on the ballot, so the media gets a freebie there. Everybody gets to know about that raise. They'll talk about that. But they never talk about the First Amendment being taken away. That's more important to me than any kind of possession. And, you know, we're getting close to the half here, and I'm not sure we got a caller in here. I had another candidate that might want to come on and do a commercial offering, kind of come in the commercial time, and I'm not sure if he's using a different phone, and this might be him plugging in. But, James, you got any question? Otherwise, we'll take this caller here. Go ahead, James. Proceed.
No, you're fine. Go ahead, Bob.
Okay, well, let's open up the phone to this caller and see, just in case it's the one taking the commercial. It could be Larry running for, precinct, you know what? Before we open this up real quick, let me bounce over. I put it up here. Okay. County Commissioner, Precinct 4. We have Larry Dale Carpenter, Jr. running for that spot against Manny. And I was talking to him earlier, and I told him to come on. If he wanted to plug himself, he's more than welcome to. And then if not, at least he just got a plug there. And let's open up the call to 7649 is what we're trying to open up here. 7649. Caller? Who have I got
here?
Hey,
Bob. Thanks for taking my call. This is Adrian out of.
Oh, Adrian. I'm sorry. I didn't recognize your number. Okay. Go ahead, Adrian. Go ahead.
Bob. And good evening to your guest, to Mr. James, the moderator, and to your guest who's running for office. I just would like to ask. Okay, so if we are to, and you guys just help me to understand this property tax aspect. If we are to eliminate property taxes, are we talking about property taxes across the board? And then if we're talking about property taxes across the board, what is it going to take? What are the property taxes going to take from? Where are we going to make up the tax revenue at, you know, to be able to, you know, I guess to move things forward throughout the city?
Well, thank you for your question. It's nice to talk to you. And gentlemen, feel free to interject if you'd like. I definitely think there is something to what I said about eliminating a lot of these antiquated departments that we have in Texas, many of which are overstaffed. I mean, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but we're talking, you know, a good chunk of change here that's going to, just like any good business, you know, you don't have more employees than you need, and you don't offer programs or services that aren't being utilized, right? So
gotcha.
I think that's definitely one way that we can save some money. You know, Bob, he presented a really good idea about, you know, kind of a step-by-step, you know, process. But don't forget, Texas is going to have one of the largest surplus budgets that we've had in a very long time going into this next session, right? And if we did something as simple as, you know, a consumption tax, and I'm just throwing a number out there, like say, you know, 7%, I mean, we're talking about, you know, over $100 billion. We could assume, you know, maybe 35% of that could be exempt. So, I mean, we're talking, you know, maybe a little under $100 billion that we could have to work with that would significantly help buy down some of this property tax. So I think there's things that we can do, and there's some brilliant minds out there that have been working on this issue for a long time. We just haven't elected the people that will actually do it.
Okay. And hey, Bob, I think with the with one of the issues we had with people not being engaged in voting here and not just within our local area, I think one of the big misconceptions is this idea that it just doesn't matter to anybody. And we got to find a way to kill that thought process, because it starts with a lot of young people. Oh, it don't, you know, when they say voting, it don't matter, it don't matter. You go, it don't matter, it don't matter. They're going to do what they want to do. So we got to find a way to change that.
There's a lot of things these young kids that should matter don't matter to them. You know, it's funny.
I'm
there's
not
a
just,
lot of things that should matter don't matter.
Bob, hold on. Let me have my extension of my thought. Not just the young people. It's not just younger people. But, oh, it's older people as well, you know. What I'm saying, all I'm saying is, is because you bring it up. You bring it up often that it's not a lot of people engaged. You know what I'm saying? But it's reasons for this. It's not just it's not just one thing or two. It's several reasons for this people not being engaged, you know, in the electoral process, you know. And I say, as far as education is concerned, my question regarding education, the public sector, the private sector, and the charter sectors, they don't teach from the same curriculums, do they?
Well, I mean, it depends. You know, we had this, like I had mentioned, this Every Student Succeeds Act. It's called the ESSA, and it basically, you know, requires any school that receives one penny of federal funds to basically teach up to the same standards, right? And then slowly trickling into that were, you know, these statewide assessments. And so when we talk about curriculum, yeah, some schools, especially, you know, your private schools, they have a little bit more wiggle room, but it all comes down to the funding. You know, if they're taking federal dollars, then, you know, they're required to teach certain things. So it is a big issue, and, you know, like you were saying with the whole voting thing, I mean, we've pretty much taken out civics and the importance of local government, including, you know, our founding documents, things that made America America. We've taken those out of the classroom. So, I mean, that's an issue. And as far as the older voters go, you know, Benjamin Franklin has this great quote. He said, justice will not be served until those who are unaffected are as outraged as those who are. And I think we're getting to that point where for a while we just kind of lived in our little bubbles. You know, everything's fine here. You know, we live in, you know, the freest country in the world. But now it's starting to affect us all. You know, we're really starting to feel it. And it's worrisome. So I think, you know, people are starting to wake up and understand the importance of voting in their local elections, you know, much less their national elections.
Hey Bob, and I'm gonna leave on this. Hey Bob, I heard you say that you're gonna give it one more try, you're gonna give it one more shot, and then it's possibly if it doesn't pan out, that's it for you, you know, because if they get their raises and you know this, that, or the other, they're taking our First Amendment. But if I could, Bob, just please, just stay the course. You are very much necessary in this fight, you know. If nobody told you, very much necessary in this fight, and I love how you're not alone. We'll fight with you, Bob. Keep hitting the hornet's nest, Bob. We need you to keep hitting the hornet's nest. You're not alone. You're getting stung. We're getting stung, too, but we can get those hornets.
We're going to give it the best between – we'll give it the best between now and the next. Well, Adrian, what it's coming down to is this, too. When I started this 10 years ago, I kind of laid me out a decade to do this in, amount of time.
Okay.
For a long time, do a grassroots. So, like, the first time I ran, I said it would be more fun than going to a sporting event, and it was. Gina spent $45,000. I spent $450, but I had a blast. I was wondering if I could do this or not, you know. Really, we want people that can do the job, you know. And I don't want to take one if I can't do it, right? So, and when I found out how low the bar was, I realized I could do it then. If that woman can make, you know, can do it, I can do it. So, but anyway, I'm at the end of my 10 years then. That's one thing. I going to do is reevaluate kind of like, do I want to go forward or do I want to go to try to find some small town where there's some honesty and respect for the people, you know, and a little bit of, you know, transparency is all these people run on that's not there, you know. So I thought that's something to lay out. Another thing I'm worried about, like everybody's talking about tonight, though, is property tax stuff and what this mayor and council's doing and stuff and how they're doing our money and stuff. I'm afraid that before I get to that point, these people could do something that could really blow up a lot of money on us and drive our property taxes through the roof. I just don't feel comfortable. These people, I feel like I'm on the ship, the Titanic, and I've seen the movie. So, but Adrian, I do appreciate your time and your efforts calling in. And you call in for any question, anything like that. Do you mean to leave you on the line, open up here, or to where jump in if you like?
I'll leave you open here.
If you want to jump back in, you feel something, just give me a whistle, then we'll bring you back in, okay?
I'll mute my phone.
We'll be glad to bring you right back in, okay? Okay. Go ahead, James. Y'all can take back over there or pick up where you were at there.
Sure. Taylor, I'm going to go back to your last answer that you had given to Adrian. I don't want to put words in your mouth by saying this, but it seems to me you feel like the social contract has been broken. Is that correct to say?
Yeah, I mean, yes. Now, in a sense, and I just, we've got a lot of good going on. I mean, we do. And we've got a lot of fighters that, you know, that are really out there and trying to make things happen, but we're fighting a beast. I mean, we really are. So, I mean, I know... And I mean, if you're talking about quote unquote the social contract, the Rousseau book, man, I had not read that in a very long time. But feel free to elaborate.
No, basically, the social contract just says that the elites don't have the right to rule you. It basically says that the people have the right to rule themselves. Is what it basically boils down to.
I mean, it's yes, and right there in our Constitution, our Declaration of Independence. You know, I mean. From the consent of the governed, they derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. And the problem is we have removed the self from self-governance, and we have been complacent and apathetic. And you know, you get the government you deserve, as that phrase said. And we're in it. We are in, you know, the seeds that we have planted. I mean, this is the reaping. So, I mean, I definitely don't want to sound doom and gloom, but I mean, we've got to stand up. We've got to step up. We've got to fight. We cannot sit on the sidelines anymore. There's no time for complacency. I mean, this is it. I really think that this is it. And this is why this election for Texas is so important. I mean, we're just one of the few conservative, really, you know, states that we have left in the union. So, I mean, in that regard, yes, absolutely. We are free men endowed by our creator with these rights. And, I mean, the time is up. Time is up.
I want to go back to your issue of health care, and you talk about having affordable health care for everybody. It makes me wonder, do you think that we were wrong by not expanding Medicaid here in the state to help people out, or was that done in the right way?
I think that – I mean, I wouldn't have voted to expand Medicaid personally. Again, I go back to exerting the rights of a free and independent and sovereign state. And anytime we get involved with the federal government, there are so many strings that, I mean, it's almost impossible to get yourself out of it. And so I think, yeah, no, I mean, I support not expanding that. I think there are other ways that we can be just, that we can offer just as affordable and accessible and equal health care to everybody. And a big part of me believes that that is in a free and a competitive market. And, I mean, I think it's as simple as that. I mean, honestly.
So how do you believe insurance in the free and competitive market right now?
Well, I mean, it is to a certain extent. However, you know, like I said, the government and these insurance companies, you know, they really have, they've kind of formed this monopoly. You know, the government will set these, or it'll set these prices, right? And then insurance says, you know, we'll agree to pay this much. And they keep this kind of like back and forth tug and pull that keeps jacking up premiums. So yes, in a sense it is, but we've also seen these insurance companies. I mean, it's expensive. It's very expensive. And prices have, you know, shot through the roof. And a lot of this is tied to, you know, this weird relationship that they have, you know, with the federal government.
Taylor, I'm just wondering it's kind of a little bit off the topic. It's not something you would deal if you were a state representative or not, but we've got a big issue that's going on in the world right now. Do you want to give us your views on that at all?
We've got a big issue. Are you talking about
what's going Ukraine, on? Russia?
Yeah. So I've thought a lot about this, and Here's my deal. In my personal opinion, I have seen the lies that the media has placed upon the American public, well, globally, really. And I am not as quick to believe everything that I see and hear on television, on radio. I'm just not. Let's not forget, we're dealing with the exact same media that killed millions of people by demonizing life-saving drugs like ivermectin, like hydroxychloroquine, when it came to the treatment of COVID. So we've known this for a long time. I mean, you go way back throughout history, and it's all documented. You know, the media and some of our three-letter agencies in the government, they work together. So, I mean, there's a little bit of history there, but we know this to be true. And so
let me jump in there. Just a second, Tara. There's one more.
Yes, sir.
Benghazi was a pretty good one. If it wasn't for Fox News, I don't think we'd be thinking it was a video that caused that riot. So that was a cover-up, too. So you can't trust anything on the media, really.
And here, you really can't. And so I'm you know, quick to listen, but I'm slow to speak, because I don't trust a lot of what comes from, you know, legacy media. Also, with regard to Ukraine and Russia, we've got to look at, you know, the past almost 10 years and certain things that have happened. You know, you had the Obama administration come in and do a complete regime change. You know, they ousted the former president. They brought someone new in there. By anyone's standards, you would say that they were installing a puppet government. Do I know that? No, I don't. But you look at that, and then you look at the connections to the Biden administration and Burisma Holdings and the connections that the Clinton Foundation has in Ukraine. I mean, the list kind of goes on and on. You look at our, you know, contracts with the Department of Defense regarding U.S. bioweapon labs. I mean, there's a lot of things going on. And, you know, the videos and the sound bites that we're getting from the media, you know, a lot of it is designed to pull on your heartstrings, and it certainly does. And I pray for everyone in that country. I really do. But, you know, I am, I want to wait and see what happens here and what comes to light.
Two big issues that Bob and I are big supporters of and believe should be there is we believe there should be term limits for politicians, and we believe there should also be contribution limits for politicians. What are your thoughts on those issues?
Okay, so I have wrestled with term limits for a while, and I want to tell you why. I agree that there are some instances, you know, Congress, for example, you know, we've had people in there for a long, long time, and I think term limits are a good thing. But, and I just want to be completely transparent and honest with you, the other half of me, when I hear term limits, it's almost like someone is telling me that I am too stupid to vote somebody out. Now, granted, we don't have a group of electors right now that are completely engaged, like, you know, say we were when our country was founded, or, you know, even, you know, later than that. But so I wrestle with that. I would like to hear more arguments pro, you know, term limits, because, and maybe one of you can answer this for me. I mean, if we as an electorate don't want someone in there anymore, we vote them out, correct? Now, if they have got a, you know, just buckets of money and can buy the election, that's another issue, which I think contribution limits would be a great thing as well. But how do you tackle that? How do you tackle, you know, basically saying the voters don't know when to vote someone out, you know, compared to, okay, yes, we need term limits for every office.
James, you got
to respond. Taylor, I think there's two ways to look at this here. Number one, and I can't speak for the state of Texas because I really haven't looked at those numbers. Most of me and Bob's focus has been on the city of Fort Worth. Now, if you want to elect, if you want to get people out of office and you don't want to have term limits, it's really hard to do something when you only have less than 2% of the population in the city of Fort Worth voting for an election in the city of Fort Worth. The other thing is, too, is if you want to recall somebody in an election, you have to have more signatures than people that voted in the election to have the recall to be done, which doesn't make it an easy thing to do.
Mm-hmm. No, you're absolutely right, and it's a catch-22 because, you know, yes, if we had more people involved, you know, it would be easier. I guess I'm not 100% sold on jumping the gun and putting limits on every single office, because what if we do get to the point again when we do have engagement on a level like we haven't known before, and, you know, we get someone great in office, fantastic in office, and they're only allowed to serve, you know, 2 years. I mean, so right now, the state that we're in, I would, you know, lean more towards, okay, yes, the current state of the nation and the amount of complacency with regard to voting in elections, yes, I think term limits are a great thing. And maybe we can do that as long as there's provisions in there that make it easily amenable. I mean, this is my first thought.
Well, Taylor, how about this?
Yes, sir.
The first thing is, the reason I'm really for term limits, one thing is that these jobs were never meant to be permanent jobs, to be career jobs. Mm-hmm. So you should go in the mindset to do a certain amount of things, a certain amount of time, and be prepared to be looking forward to do something when you come out. You know, that you're really anxious when you get through with your job here and you do it good, you have something already laid out you're going on to do because you served your time. And that's one reason. Another thing is that if people don't like term limits, then tell them to get it together enough to vote out term limits. Until they get enough together and want to vote them out, then let's keep term limits in, because we've got to change something. And as far as council race, I think that the perfect mix would be three terms in and then step down for one term. And then come back if the person in, or we can't get anybody in good, and they want to, you know, open the door back up. But step down for one,
right,
at least, and then it would do a person good too to clear their head and come back. They'd probably be good for another, like one of those football players. You know, they make another round or two at another team, and that's about it. But anyway, there's another.
Hey guys,
anyway,
I have a great observation regarding term limits. I think this, if you consider someone good, like you say, you go in there with the mind, okay, I'm in term limits. I'm going to do whatever I need to do to affect change. When my term is up, if you're that person that everybody's loving and wants to stay in, you just endorse the next best thing, Because and then people keep the goodness of whatever you started, and then the next person, you know, they'll keep that goodness going. You know, just encourage the next person to step on up. You go for it. Your time is up. Try to keep that model going of goodness in that space. That way, you don't have to worry about somebody ineffective getting in. You know.
Yeah.
In other words, what you're saying is your endorsement's as good as a better seal. In other words, like you have a good endorsement
when you
get your endorsement. Is that right? Okay.
Yeah. And those are really good points as well. And, you know, Rob, what you said, yeah, it's true. You know, our founders and the earliest politicians, I mean, they were farmers, teachers, preachers, you know, so I see that as well. You know, it's not supposed to be a job that you're supposed to have your life. You know, my opponent, she's been in office for 10 years and I'm still looking around for things that have been done to improve our community. So I get what you're saying. You know, all great points.
Well, mine's going to be until she dies. No, go ahead.
Adrian, to answer you on that question you were just talking about with everything, there are a lot of good people out there in the world that could do something good for government. The problem is those people don't want to get involved in government and run for office, and that's something I think we need to change.
Gotcha. I'm with you, sir. I'm with you 100%.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Definitely. That's
and I also think with the campaign, I think the campaign, because think about these guys, and this is no knock on them. You know, I got a lot. I learned a lot from President Trump being in office. I was somebody who was I just learned a lot. I seen a lot. I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. And he was just straightforward with everything. But I realized this. He showed me about loyalty. What President Trump did was anybody who gave, anybody that gave tremendously into his campaign to make sure he was where he was, he basically, you know, I think that's what them campaign finance restrict, you know, should be limited, because he gave positions to people who really probably wouldn't qualify for the position, but who could say anything, because at the end of the day, he's about loyalty. At the end of the day, he's about loyalty, you know what I'm saying? So I think with the campaign financing, I think if a person gives so much, they'll be looking for something in return, you know? Like, I'm just an everyday Joe. I give my $100, whatever, woo-woo-woo, I'm probably not expecting that in return, but I'm hoping you do your best. But if I give $5 million, you know, am I to be looking for something in return? Is there something coming with that $5 million I'm giving? You know, what's attached to that $5 million? You see what I'm saying?
Right. And gosh, have we not seen that? Just that exactly right there, run wild in state politics and federal politics. I mean, it's pay to play. So I see what you're saying there. It's a good point.
Well, my point is about campaign contributions is that it starts at home. We have the power to do it here in our city. Florida didn't.
Yes,
there.
Sir.
We can do it here. So this is something we can tackle. I'm not really – I mean, it needs to be done on up the chain. But first, if we can't do it in our local government here, then forget about looking up the chain, I think. So that's why I'm trying to get people involved with the show here and sharing information, trying to get us more involved in doing cards to house and trying to say, listen, you know, if you want to be in the game – you can be in the game when it's your local government. You don't have to watch on the sideline. You can actually participate and make a difference here. But now when it comes to Washington, for us, we're just watching. You know, okay, we got about 90 seconds
right.
to go there. I'm going to back out here and let James finish it up with you. And Taylor, I appreciate you coming on our show. And I'll let James finish
thank
up.
Thank you so much.
Anything you got to say, okay?
Yeah.
Go ahead, James.
Taylor, you have anything you want to say in closing?
You know, everybody listening just, I'd appreciate your prayers more than anything. I feel like right now, especially, we are in a spiritual battle for sure. I mean, we're seeing it on many, many fronts. And so your prayers would be much appreciated. Obviously, your support and spreading the word that there is someone in District 95 that's different, you know, new, can bring fresh ideas, and that at my deepest core, am an advocate for the state and for the citizens of the state and for everything that, you know, we were founded on. So I so appreciate the time that I spent with you guys tonight, and I really enjoyed it.
What's your website?
Taylor, I want to appreciate.
What's your website?
Sorry.
What's your website?
It is Mondick. Yes, sir. It's Mondick for 95.com So Mondick, MONDICKFOR95.com. And I just was able to get a Facebook again because I was kicked off, I guess, for some post that was, I would deem, not controversial at all. But I'm back, and you can just search Taylor for Texas or Taylor Mondick, and you can find me there.
All right, Taylor, I want to appreciate you for coming on tonight. I hope we can get you back on when the general election's coming on to talk a little bit more with us.
That'd be great. Thank you guys so much for what you're doing. I appreciate it, and I enjoyed it.
All right. Thank
you,
guys.
Bob, we have anybody coming on next week?
Oh, yes. Next week we have our special show next week is Recall Maddie. It's in our Fort Worth Weekly ad, and also we got 2 10-foot by 5-foot signs coming out. And that's what that one is. And the week after is the big one. We have Kim Niels, the police oversight. She's the head branch or the she's the head over the police oversight committee, okay? We've got a lot of questions, but we'll do a same advertisement for that one, too. That'll be a big one, I believe. And we're going to see what kind of response we can get, if people really want to get rid of the mayor or not next week. So until then, I appreciate everybody coming on, and stay safe. And, James, y'all have a good night. Thanks for hosting, James.
All right, until next week, God bless. We'll see you.
Thank you, guys. Bye.